Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. Today is Sunday, July 21st, 2019, and we welcome you all. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, the United States of America, Plainfield, New Jersey. We will start with our morning prayer.
Page 165 of Miscellany. Goodness never fails to receive its reward, for goodness makes life a blessing. As an active portion of one stupendous whole, goodness identifies man with universal good. Thus may each member of this church rise above the oft-repeated inquiry, "What am I?" with a scientific response, "I am able to impart truth, health, and happiness, and this is my rock of salvation and my reason for existing." Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I love that. Thank you. Okay, now we will go to our watching point.
Okay, watching point number 59. Watch lest you become a pillar of salt in that you do not promptly and rightly complete each demonstration. No demonstration is finished if you look back to see the destruction of the air, since looking back carries the implication that, although the unreality of the air is now being demonstrated, it was once real. Christian Science, Mrs. Eddy tells us, is divine science reduced to human apprehension. The former carries the admission of a human problem, while the latter does not. No demonstration is finished until you retreat into divine science and realize that no air ever existed or even claimed to exist. Hence, there was nothing to be destroyed. Mrs. Eddy once wrote to a student, quote, "Now, dear, a dream is not real. You have not been sick and cannot be sick. It is impossible, so I shall not worry. No mortal, however malicious, can make a lie true. And if they tell you you are poisoned, it has no effect whatever. For a lie is not real, and you know this." End quote.
Okay, comments on that? Again, we've talked about this. You have to know the utter nothingness of it. If you think it was real, it was something you had to get rid of, you are giving it reality. To know it never was the truth in the first place, ever. Wipe it out entirely.
And we need to be very, very careful what we say about this phenomenon, because there are people out there who, if you say, "No, it was never real in the first place," will think that you belong in an insane asylum, or worse. This is something that needs to be proven, not talked about.
And so be careful in your testimonies. Stay away from the Christian Science jargon that you had a belief of something and it was never real. You have to be very, very careful of that. People will not understand it. It sounds like, well, what are they talking about? They didn't have a problem in the first place. So what was there to be healed?
Because when someone is ill, the illness is very real to them at the time. And this is not an easy thing to get to the point where you understand that it was never real in the first place. That's the objective. That's our goal, if you will.
Florence?
Well, I think at the same time in our practice, when we've known the good that counteracts it, we should be striving to see it as unreal, as never happening. And that, I think that's the balance there. It's very true that to say just, "Oh, you don't have a headache," when somebody doesn't really know what you're saying behind that, that's not even kind. but at the same time, we have to not be tending to salt all the time, I feel.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah.
Because there's so much of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our job as scientists, as practitioners, and we all are, if we're practicing the science, is to know the is to not be deceived by appearances, is to know the unreality of error, and not be persuaded to think otherwise. As a good practitioner once said, if you convince me of your illness, then we're both sunk.
Yeah. All right, our subject today is life. Golden text, Psalm 23. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Now this puts to silence all of this worry about the future. All of this worry about one's so-called mortality. When those thoughts come, oh, what's going to happen in the future? You know, what will this or that? You answer it with the 23rd Psalm. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And the key to that is you begin to dwell in the house of the Lord now by acknowledging his presence and power, by turning to him for all things. And once you're in that house, the secret place of the Most High, you'll dwell there forever. What? Tell me, what more do you need to know? What do you need to know about the future? Is there anything else that you need to know than this? That's why the danger of going to these, and I see them in every town, those psychics. It's because people are so nervous and afraid about what's going to happen, so they go to those psychics, and then they really scare themselves to pieces. This is your psychic right here, and it's God, okay?
But also to be looking at the future all the time means you're forgetting what he has done, which confirms that he's everywhere, will see you through everything. But, you know, I think you're just looking at the future and forgetting, oh, what good, who has brought me thus far?
Yes, that beautiful hymn, I guess. Hitherto the Lord hath helped me, and hitherto he will. Jeremy?
And how well can you be doing your duty right now if you're thinking about the past or the future all the time?
You can't. You cannot. And Jesus says it in the Lord's Prayer, and, you know, that stop this. And in Sermon on the Mount, sufficient is the evil of today, I think he says. You've got enough to deal with right now without being worried about tomorrow. So remember this. This is your answer. This is what I go by. This is enough for me to know. I don't need to know anything else. People are always planning and, oh, this might happen and that might happen. And well, the only thing that can happen when you're in that Christ mind is goodness and mercy shall follow you all the days of your life, and you will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
And that is why the only legitimate goal we should ever have is to get into that house of the Lord
and stay in it.
And stay there. Mm-hmm. And when it says in the Bible, sufficient is the evil of the day, what that means to me is my job today is to handle the animal magnetism that would try to take me out of the house of the Lord, which would try to pollute my consciousness with something other than the mind of Christ. And there's a lot out there that's trying to do that. So we've got a lot of work to do each day to stay in the house of the Lord.
It's hymn 391 where it says, why search the future and the past? Why do ye look with tearful eyes and seek far off for paradise? before your feet, life's pearl is cast. The whole rest of it is just beautiful.
It's a beautiful hymn. Beautiful hymn. And this from Mary Baker Eddy that I love. And instead of being bound for the grave, we must know we are on the road of eternal life that has no sense of death. Not even a sense of it. When you're in life, you can't have even a sense of death. And our lesson in Science and Health starts out, science teaches man that God is the only life. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And we're going to destroy all the negative and false suggestions that there is life in matter. Carol, will you read the responsive reading?
From Proverbs. Hear, O my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of thy life shall be many. Let them not depart from thine eyes. Keep them in the midst of thine heart, for they are life unto those that find them, and health to all their flesh. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Let thine eyes look right on, and let thine eyelids look straight before thee. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand, nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil.
It's a simple guideline to eternal life here. Ponder, what do you think about? What do you think about during the day? Do you ponder the sayings of God and receive the sayings? Is that what you're thinking about? Or are you thinking about all this other stuff? And then you keep them. You don't let them depart from your eyes. You need good vision. Well, this will help. And then keep them in the midst of thine heart. Does anyone know Mrs. Eddy's definition of heart in the glossary? It's on page 587. Mortal feelings, motives, affections, joys, and sorrows. And it goes on in here, to keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. This is hugely important. Linda wrote about it. What did, do you want to say anything about what you wrote, Linda?
Well, that just that to keep was to watch and guard. And then I remembered we had that beautiful Bible study on armor. And one of them I always thought about much is that you said we needed to guard our hearts and the breastplate of righteousness to guard our hearts and feelings. And then I just got more of a definition of what Bible study tools said. It was mind, character, will, intention, desire. So that's a lot to guard. That's everything you just said. And so I reminded myself by writing down some of the things that we've been given.
Good. That's it. Your motives and feelings. Kratzer wrote a wonderful article in his book, Dominion Within, called The Law of Right Feeling. And he brings out, and this, when I first read this article, it just blew me away. He brings out, you know, we're always watching our thoughts and we're told to watch our thoughts. But he said, what about your feelings? Now you can intellectually guard your thought and say, well, I am not to hate. But then how are you feeling? Are you really in touch with your feelings? Feelings are important. And this is what this is saying. For out of them are the issues of life. Our life is in God. It is not in matter. And but we must watch, yes, our thoughts and also our feelings. And he brings it out so clearly that if you let all the discordant situations around you determine your feelings, well, lots of luck. You will never feel good. Okay. You'll be miserable.
And you won't know why some days are good days and some days are bad days.
Yes.
I used to do that. So.
Yes. You have to have this inner sense of the kingdom of heaven within you, that your peace and your joy and all that is from God and God alone. He goes into, if you use your pocketbook, suddenly everything's horrible. You feel terrible. So that experience had all this power over you. Well, he's saying, no, that's not right. That's not true. You hold on to that inner sense of joy and peace. He says, let one of our watchwords be no connection between the good of the mind and the discordant human or material circumstances. We can always say to ourselves that God is sufficient reason for not fearing, not doubting, not worrying, not grieving. Now, we're taught just the opposite, that everything outside there determines how you feel, and you have no control over your feelings. Science tells you differently. And when I learned this and I became acquainted with myself and how I felt, not just how I thought, because I tried to think really good. I tried to discipline and think really good. But inside, I was just a churning mess. You be in touch with how you're feeling and deal with that. This is a huge point Kratzer makes. And he this is a quote from him. Jesus' life outwardly was one of the most troubled lives that was ever lived. Tempest and tumult and tempest, the waves breaking over it all the time. But the inner life was a sea of glass. The great calm was always there. At any moment, you may have gone to him and found rest. Now, that actually was Henry Drummond, excuse me. And then he says, Kratzer, we should and can attain the sea of glass for ourselves. And this isn't some fake thing you conjure up, which I used to try to do too. Well, I'm peaceful. It doesn't matter what's going on. I'm peaceful. No, it comes from obedience to God. It is what was read on Wednesday about the peace of God. But that comes from obedience and watching your feelings and emotions and not letting them run away with you. You hear the first bit of bad news and, it's terrible. And you lose all your peace, which you've given it away.
I think walking, every day knowing that all my good, all of it, has its source in God. I think that was read on Wednesday too. And God is unchanging. I think that's it gives a sense of a pretty good anchor. It's firm. It's a foundation that is not shaky even.
Thank you. It's not shaky even. And especially when you start out in this science and your world seems to be in total turmoil, you've got to begin with this and get dominion. God gave us dominion over all things, including our feelings. Now, the fruits of the Spirit are what?
Joy, peace,
love, temperance, long suffering.
Yes.
Patience.
Meekness. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All those good things. Well, the carnal mind is what?
Resentment.
Envy, jealousy,
all that. Okay.
Everything awful.
So if you're feeling those things, you can know you are definitely in the human mind. Air has been speaking to you, and start to deal with it. Now, this doesn't mean to just repress it, which is what I did. It means to deal with it. Okay, what is bothering me? And what should I do about it? Why am I hating or jealous? Or what is the difficulty? And then what is the truth about that? And in that way, you can conquer these erroneous thoughts. And that is keeping your heart with all diligence. It must be done, because out of it are the issues of life. Because in belief, and Kratzer says this too, if you keep these negative emotions and go on and on and on with them, what would seem to happen?
You will get sick.
Yeah. It will manifest itself in some other way, because you don't catch it when it first comes as a feeling. Maybe first it's a thought, then it's a feeling. So then the next thing you know, you've got some physical problem. The next thing you know, your life's all out of control. Everything's wrong. You're right in the middle of that lovely Adam dream we talk about, which you need an awakening from. So this is important. Out of it are the issues of life.
You tell us never to be off guard, but I have found every time I've been off guard, it has to do with this, the feelings, the emotions.
Yes.
I realized.
Yes. And it comes up suddenly, you know, all of a sudden you're anxious, or all of a sudden you're this or that. But excuse me, it's never suddenly, because you've been thinking anxious thoughts. You've been thinking resentful thoughts. You see, the thoughts come first, then the feeling, and then the physical manifestation. So let's catch it early on.
Like this is important.
Go ahead.
No, this is important, because often I'll hear, oh, it just suddenly came over me, you know. And it's like you said, it's not that it didn't just suddenly come over you. It's been little wrong thoughts unchecked.
Yeah, absolutely true. And I can raise my hand and know that's for myself. You think it just, you wake up in the morning, you're depressed. No, you have been thinking depressed thoughts. That's why at night you're to clean your slate. You're to be at peace with yourself. You're to take care of all these emotions and feelings, because out of it are the issues of life. And if you don't, it's like a galloping horse that takes you away, and you feel then you're out of control. But you're never out of control. Well, you might be, but God is never out of control. He's in control. Jeremy?
I was just thinking from the book, the Ultimate Freedom, he talked about, he scribbled CT on the wall.
Yes.
To control thoughts. So now I have to think CF as well.
Yeah.
Control feelings, yeah. Yes. And that was about the prisoner at war. They're taught, I mean, they have specific brainwashing going on, and that's all of mortal mind. We're being brainwashed
every day.
So in a prison cell, they're taught, before they get there, to hold to a fact, to a truth. The multiplication table. Of course, we in science know many truths. God is love. God is, you know, God made me perfect, or all kinds of truths to keep yourself demesmerized. And what Jeremy was saying was no connection. No connection, no connection with those feelings, no connection with those thoughts. They're not of God. And sometimes it can seem like a fight. But the more you do it, the better it gets. Just like any exercise, you're exercising your mental muscles, and it gets easier, and you're more alert to those suggestions and cast them out more quickly.
This is George. In Vermont.
Hi, George.
Hi. I was thinking, I'm really enjoying this lesson. I think, though, not to disagree with what you're saying, but is one of the things that's a struggle. I think that in our culture, this is so counter to our culture, because we have part of our culture that says we just shouldn't deal with feelings at all, you know, the sort of the you know, the quote, the strong silent type, you know, just nobody should, you know, deal with any feelings at all. We just don't want to make our lives messy by even acknowledging we have them. And then on the other hand, we've got this, you know, really strong sort of narcissistic stream in our culture, which just says basically our feelings are all completely true. We ought to just follow them wherever they want. You know, buy this, you know, have sex whenever you want, take drugs whenever you want, do whatever you want because it feels good or because you're you and you deserve to be the center of the universe, blah, blah, blah. So I think this is a really germane thing to be discussing right now because there is a balance. You know, God tells us to confess. And confess doesn't mean it's sin. It just means to agree with God that I've got these feelings, and now we allow Him to shepherd those, to change those, to modify those, to correct those, to whatever it takes.
That's right. So it's neither one. And I've tried both, yes. The first particularly, where you just suppress it or don't acknowledge it. That was my way of coping, I guess. Or yeah, this culture, just whatever you feel you do, because that's what is, what you feel. Now, many times you're feeling things from God, but this is where you need the discernment, the spiritual sense, to tell, again, what is of God. And as we've talked about, the fruits of the Spirit are fruits. They're the result of our obedience to God. And that's why you have to ponder all of these statements, all of His rules and laws, so you know what that is. Because if you don't know, and that's the sad thing about a lot of our youth now, they don't know the laws of God. They haven't been taught it. You need to, it all comes in succession, this responsive reading. You need to ponder those laws. You need to know what's right, the right from wrong. And then you can deal with feelings and emotions appropriately and in a healing way.
And I think that's why the way is referred to as straight and narrow. It's not a wide path that you just turn everything off. It's not a wide path where you just accept everything that comes into your consciousness. No, there's a straight and narrow way of obedience to God. Mrs. Eddy says in the second citation that it is a straight and narrow way which leads to the understanding that God is the only life. It's a warfare with the flesh. Because all of these other, you know, all these other so-called ways that George described so well are ways of the flesh. They're human theories. They're human. Yeah, I mean, really, there's no God in either one of them. And it's a warfare mentally with those human beliefs and feelings that we have to conquer. And reach the goal of spirit or life in God. So we're talking about a process here that we have to, you know, that we have to follow every day. And you got to start somewhere.
And, you know, if you do this, you're not going to have heart trouble. What were you going to say, Florence?
I was going to say that here, I think the word handle is important because all the writers write about it, handle animal magnetism, handling it instead of getting into a fight, because often you get into, I have to demonstrate or I have to do, and it can become somewhere you've made a reality of it. You've even given it power. But Mrs. Eddy is telling us we are coming to anything or anything comes to us, we are beginning with the power, the dominion and the authority of the Christ truth. So that's what handles the lie. It manages it. It puts it under its feet. It has no power. But I feel that for a long time I used to just, you know, I was trying to fight something, and that was only making it more real instead of...
Very important point. You start with the unreality. This goes back to the first commandment. No other gods before me. So in truth, all is mind in its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. And that includes all the negative emotions and all of that. They're conjured up by mortal mind and, you know, get you in a state. But it's to know its unreality is what is the only ultimate answer. And that is how you, quote, handle it. But it must be handled, not ignored, not submitted to, but seen for what it is. You know it's nothingness, and then demonstrate that nothingness. Now, Gary's going to read I love questions and answers and miscellaneous writings. Everyone should know this very well because everyone has all these questions about Christian Science, which she answers all of them. So this, go ahead.
Yeah, this speaks directly to this point. On page 50 of Miscellaneous Writings, it says, "What the question is, do you believe in change of heart?" And the answer is, we do believe and understand, which is more, that there must be a change from human affections, desires, and aims to the divine standard, be ye therefore perfect. Also, that there must be a change from the belief that the heart is matter and sustains life to the understanding that God is our life, that we exist in mind, live thereby, and have being. This change of heart would deliver man from heart disease and advance Christianity 100-fold. The human affections need to be changed from self to benevolence and love for God and man, changed to having but one God and loving him supremely and helping our brother man. This change of heart is essential to Christianity and will have its effect physically as well as spiritually, healing disease. Burnt offerings and drugs, God does not require.
That really says it. It's needed to be studied and understood because the world tells you that you know, your life, your heart, all your organs. Oh my goodness, that is life. All your organs. Gosh, if you have heart trouble, it's over. This explains what you need to do to change your affections from the selfish sense of materiality in life. And that's going to be the next part of our class. But someone else was trying to speak before Gary read.
Yes. Maybe there's somebody else, but I'm going to just jump back in. I also think it's just really important to stress that we need each other to be able to do this. I think it's in James where it says, to confess your sins to one another and uphold each other, that you may be healed. And then in Hebrews where it says, do not forsake assembling yourselves together. This is the habit of some, lest you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. And while I know we have this individual responsibility, we're also to bear one another's burdens. And I just want to use this moment to thank the Plainfield Church. It's taken me quite a while to get to a point where I've been willing to talk to a practitioner about personal things, and it's been really helpful. Because so often I've made a massive problem out of something that really isn't a problem. And the practitioner will say, well, gosh, I mean, that's pretty normal. Yeah, and it's getting better. And it's like all of a sudden his power is gone. So just talking to another human being who's has the wisdom of God and knows the Bible and science and health, you know, that just takes so much power out of this negative or deceit. Self-deceived thinking that I and probably many of us at different times have gotten into. So I just want to stress that whole thing about fellowship and intimacy with other believers, that to me, this is a crucial component of our continuing to grow as Christians.
Well, I think that's what Ms. Betty says. That's our reason for existing.
Yes, she does. It's to help each other. Exactly. You can't. It's essential in this science.
Mrs. Evans one of her favorite sayings was, one stick you can break, but a bundle you can't. We look out for each other, and that's what a church is for.
And certainly the office of practitioner, that's what it's for. You can go around talking to a lot of people. Sometimes that can be just very confusing. You want someone who understands the science, at least to some degree. And that's why the Office of Practitioner was established.
Well, negative thoughts are emotions like resentment. I've learned in Christian Science, I mean, it just hurts you. It doesn't hurt the person you might resent.
That's very true.
It just hurts you.
It hurts you. That's why you need to give it up.
You're the one thinking it. Oh.
You're the one, and yeah.
It's like that saying, drinking poison and expecting the other person to die or something.
Yeah, there's a saying that you make poison for another person, but you end up drinking it yourself.
Well, and Miss Betty explained that very well, doesn't she? What does she say about hatred?
The plague spot.
The plague spot. Spreads its virus.
And kills that land.
Yes.
And Florence, I don't know if you have it to hand, but you wrote the Blue Book, page 228 in the forum. Never resent a wound from anyone.
Oh, I don't have to.
Never resent a wound from anyone, but always leave it to God to avenge and heal. He will rightly reward. You cannot. Forgiveness is forgetfulness of sin, disease, and all errors in others and in ourselves. No wrong is forgiven until it is forgotten. If this is not done, it works like remembering disease. It makes you a sinner. It grows chronic and incurable. If we do not do this, it does us more harm than our enemies. So that's to Fairley's point. But here again, these are the emotions run amok. So be aware of what you're thinking and
how you're feeling.
And how you're feeling. And in Science and Health on 425, Mrs. Eddy says, consciousness constructs a better body when faith in matter has been conquered. Correct material belief by spiritual understanding, and spirit will form you anew. You will never fear again, except to offend God, and you will never believe that heart or any portion of the body can destroy you. I love that. It should have been in the lesson, but it wasn't, so I'm adding it. And I wrote the lesson, so I can do that. Anyway. Because that is what we believe. What organ of the body do you think is destroying you? Tell me about it, okay? She's saying no. No, don't go there. And spiritualize what it is, what heart is. Heart beats for God. Your emotions, when they are of God, they bring their peace-giving, their life-giving, their love-giving. And we go. You can go through all the organs. I don't know them all. Skin is one of them. Bowels, the bowels of mercy. Joe gave a testimony on being healed of constipation using those thoughts. The Bible, you can find almost anything about any part of your body and spiritualize the concept of it. But there's not life in it. Only is it spiritualized, yes. Heart, the great heart of love, yes. That's you and me and all, but not this material heart that we're all checking all the time and seeing how many beats it does a day. I don't even know, but so, yeah, it's good to laugh at these things because otherwise we take ourselves way too seriously. Taking ourselves seriously and our problems seriously, it goes back to what Florence said, you're making a big reality of it. And you fear it, you're fighting it, and you're afraid of it.
And you're breaking the first commandment because you're making it God.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You should fear breaking that instead of all the other stuff.
Yes. So then we get to the point, and Gary read about it in What is a Change of Heart, where we have to be living. Our life is not in this selfish sense of materiality. And Jeremy wrote about it because the preacher man was in it, wasn't he? He sought out everything, accretion, not unfoldment. I'll get this and I'll get that, and this will make me happy, and that'll make me happy. And what did he find?
Vanity and vexation.
Vanity.
And haven't we all found that? So what else did you write?
Well, I just I mean, aside from really just knowing what he meant by it, looking back on my life before here, I just seeing how all that work was fruitless desire or endeavor, trifling labor that produces no good, you know, and the emptiness I felt. I'm just so grateful for Christian Science for showing me how to get away from that. For whatever reason, that's one of my favorite things to think about once in a while, just how bleak it was and how almost instantaneously coming here made everything start brightening up and getting better. I just love that.
Hey, did you hear that? Instantaneously. Everyone is looking for that instantaneous.
It doesn't have to be forever.
It's the light coming to the dark.
Go ahead. Think about what Jeremy just said. Sometimes a metaphor is a really good way to grasp a spiritual truth. And one of the things I've heard and used and working with other people is, you know, we spend a lot of time climbing a ladder, you know, only to find out it's leaning on the wrong wall. No, I just love that.
Yeah, well, it's looking for the answers in any place other than God.
Well, and that's the result of not seeing clearly, isn't it?
Yes.
When we have our eye on what we know of God, as little as it may be, when we have our eye on that, things clear up. And we lean our ladders on the right wall.
Yeah. The light that shows you the right wall.
Let your eye be single, the Sermon on the Mount.
It reminds me of Churchill, you know, if you're going through hell, keep going. If all you've found are the wrong ways, then
you can chalk them off and find them.
Yeah, you chalk them off, that's right. And keep looking, keep finding it. And you will find it because, again, if you seek me with your whole heart, mind, and soul, you will be found of me. That's God in the Bible. So, but are you seeking him? No, if you're seeking all these other solutions and all these things, other things that you think are going to make you happy, you will just seek and seek and seek, and you will have vanity and vexation of spirit. You can count on it. And that, who was it, Thoreau or one of them said that people lead the lives of quiet desperation. Don't be one of them. In science, you don't have to. And I love what Anne from England wrote on the forum. She's quoting Mrs. Eddy, where Mrs. Eddy says, "Health, life, and mortals will never reach their maximum until we relinquish the belief that matter has aught to do with life. I am glad there is but one God, but one life, and this one is shadowed forth in order, beauty, and goodness. I am glad that evil hath no life or immortality, that mortal pain-giving sources are but the things of belief, dreams, and not realities, the vagaries of the mortal and not the immortal thought, and that this shall sometime be learned, and the body be free as the pinions of a bird, and every sense of weakness or of pain shall disappear." She looks up that word vagary, a wandering of the thought, a wild freak, a whim, a whimsical purpose. This is a definition of life, and it's not dependent on your human circumstances, body, matter. And the more you look to that, the more confused you will become. So we get into, well, and Parthens wrote the beautiful thought about a little child shall lead them, and that this is what we look for in ourselves, that childlike quality, to put our head on the Father's bosom and trust him, turn to him for all our answers. He's got it. Spend your time there. And then it goes on in Science and Health about to calculate one's life prospect from a material basis would infringe upon spiritual law and misguide human hope. Having faith in the divine principle of health and spirituality and spiritually, excuse me, understanding God sustains man under all circumstances. So when you are seeking your life outside of this material world, so-called, you will find your answers. And Florence read at the very beginning in the prayer, is what did Mrs. Eddy say her life purpose was?
Imparting health.
Yes.
Impart truth, health, and
truth, health, and happiness.
Thank you. Are you doing that during your day? You see, if you get your thought off your body and off the material circumstances, healing comes. You focus on the Father. And that is why in Fidelity, Mrs. Eddy says, one of my favorites, it changed my life, too soon you cannot turn from disease in the body to find disease in the mortal mind. And what?
Next cure.
And working for God.
Working for God.
You want to know the answers? You want to know why we've had a lot of healing in our church? This is the simple solution of it. You can try to avoid it. You can say, oh, that's no fun. I don't want to do it. Well, go ahead. Go ahead. Continue on your way and see what you find. But those of us here have found this. Right, Carol?
Definitely. There's purpose to life where there wasn't before. You kind of wonder why? What's it all about? You know, now you know.
We were created for a purpose. The Bible says it over and over. God's purpose. You have to find that purpose. When you find that, you find life with a capital L. If you just exist for your own little life, your own little concerns, your own little getting junior into school or whatever, life is hell. I know because I was there. You have to have a bigger purpose in life, a larger purpose, and that will lift you up and out of any human sense of dreariness and drudgery and other things. Florence?
No, and that means that whatever our work is, whatever God has given us to do, whether in the law firm or wherever it is, you're doing it for the glory of God. That's working for God and has His blessings.
Thank you. That's right. Doesn't matter where you are, what job you are in, you start with that. What you do is for the glory of God, and God will direct all your paths as to what you do day by day.
And your path will be different from everybody else's path. So don't try to copy somebody else or emulate or envy anybody else. God has a very unique and specific purpose for each one of us. And there's no greater joy than finding that purpose and fulfilling it.
Spiritual living and blessedness are the only evidences by which we can recognize true existence and feel the unspeakable peace which comes from an all-absorbing spiritual love. Now, that's your true existence rather than just existing. And all of this is life. And this is what heals heart, skin, bones, organs of every and anything, you name it, it will heal it. And Gary will end now. Jeremy put this short article by Martha Wilcox on our carousel, our life purpose.
Mrs. Eddy records her life purpose when she says, quote, "My life purpose is to impress humanity with the genuine recognition of practical, operative Christian science," end quote. There was no doubt in Mrs. Eddy's mind that she had a definite purpose in life to fulfill, and what this purpose was. No matter what others might do, this was definitely fixed and accomplished in her thought. And she knew that she must follow this definite direction in life in order to fulfill her divine purpose. When we recognize the magnitude of her purpose, what it has meant in our lifetime to have an unfailing, ever operative science to apply to our human affairs, we may well marvel and express our gratitude that this blessing that has appeared to us, for this blessing that has appeared to us in our world. Mrs. Eddy had a clear sense of the signification of the so-called human experience. She recognized that no one ever was born out of due time. She knew that she had a definite purpose to fulfill, and she knew that she had the power and intelligence from God with which to fulfill that purpose. Are we, as Christian Scientists, aware to the fact that we too have a definite life purpose? Are we following a definite direction in life in order to fulfill this divine existence? We should be deep thinkers and envision happier days for the human family. As individual Christian Scientists, we need a greater love for God and a greater love for man in our hearts, in order that the sublime life purpose may be carried out. Each one of us has a sublime task to perform. We should so live and so love that God or truth is made comprehensible to us, and that we may hear his voice saying, quote, "This is the way, walk ye in it," end quote. Isaiah 30.
God is our life. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.